Cape Talk. A world view from London with Adam Gilchrist.
Adam, good morning.
Good morning, Rafilvi.
How are you doing?
I'm unbelievably well, thank you. How are you doing?
That's amazing. I'm excellent. These warning shots to Russia. Navalny on the brink. And they're coming from various places.
Yeah, a whole bunch of warnings all in one. Certainly Alexei Navalny is one of them. The White House warning Russia effectively to safeguard the health of the Kremlin critic. We know he's in a bad way. He's been moved to a medical facility in the prison where he is. Terrible prison conditions, a hunger strike, the lingering effects of Novichok. He is not in the best way. And it was a very sort of cloaked kind of pointing by Joe Psaki, the White House spokeswoman, saying that essentially, we won't tell you what we'll do, but we'll do something should he perish. European Union ministers had a big meeting in Brussels, and they warned Russia not to invade Ukraine. It's one of those classics. I mean, you think, wasn't Hitler warned not to invade Poland? Is that how it goes? Stop the military buildup at the border, basically, the EU minister said, that, you know, pull back.
It's almost...
Which resonates a bit, yes.
It's almost as if every warning becomes a to-do list.
Yes.
Anyway.
Here you are. Well, or a don't do list, I suppose, in this case. Yeah. Yeah. Don't kill Alexei Navalny. Don't invade Ukraine. We know that there's been this enormous military buildup, but okay, Russia could have its reasons. And then the Czech Republic is warning Russia not to carry out effectively acts of terrorism. This is because we know that the Czechs have now blamed Russian military intelligence, the GRU, for an explosion at an arms depot. Now, this happened many years ago, but they've now put two and two together. They say they have evidence. Two people died in the explosion, by the way. They say they have evidence that leads them to two Russian agents and the same two Russian agents that were thought to be behind the Salisbury poisonings in England. Is there anything Russia won't do?
I mean,
if only for all cloak and dagger. They seem to do it out brazenly in you know, at the open air. It is raw, naked Russian aggression in a lot of cases. And I'm trying not to do a Western spin on it. I'm just trying to look at it the way it is.
Very interesting. India's COVID crisis continues, unfortunately.
Oh, boy. Yeah, and the stories coming out are not good, not comfortable. Delhi, for instance, the Indian capital, they've announced a week-long lockdown. It began last night after this record spike in cases. Basically, the city's healthcare system has been overwhelmed. They've run out of hospital beds and oxygen, which, as we know, is crucial in the treatment of people with severe COVID. In Uttar Pradesh, the most populous Indian state, hospitals are turning patients away. Some patients are being driven to one and then another and then another and then and just, you know, not getting anywhere. Funeral pyres, they say, are burning 24/7 in Uttar Pradesh. We know that there are over 200,000 cases a day. There were 1,600 deaths from COVID in India just yesterday. And India has announced that all adults over the age of 18 will be offered a vaccine, which is great in theory. Mm-hmm. But of course, number one, they don't have the supplies. The world doesn't have the supplies. Number two, administering that to pushing a billion people is going to take some doing. No wonder the UK and others have now put India on the red list so that travel is basically effectively barred.
During a peak in particular. And then the football breakaway, the Super League. What has been the feedback of that side?
Oh, my head is still spinning because I've just been taking it all in for 24 hours. I don't know. It's like, oh, I think everyone has spoken. Has anyone not got an opinion on the European
Super
League?
No, we've been hearing a lot about it on the show. Yeah.
There's a lot of opinion out there. Now, I would suggest that away from Europe, there is probably more support for a European Super League. I'm pretty sure it's also not unanimous, but there'll be more support because you get a richer diet of football matches mm-hmm. to watch. But within Europe, this is about grassroots. This is about the classic pyramid. If you take away the pyramid in football, the ability for a club to rise and another club to fall, then you've taken away competition, you've taken away the very inherent nature of sport. And that's effectively what these 12 super rich clubs are doing. Prince William has spoken. He's talked about the values of competition and fairness. We know that the UK Prime Minister, the French President are both having meetings and are talking about stopping this in its tracks. It's at that kind of level politically. The UEFA President has talked about how the three clubs involved in Champions League semi-finals next week, so that's Chelsea, Real Madrid and Manchester City, all of them in the, signing up to the Super League, they could be kicked out of the Champions League this season because they're of involvement in the future. As I say, everyone has had an opinion on this, but I think the banner that said an awful lot, and doesn't this apply to more than just football? It was held up outside Old Trafford last night, a couple of fans, maybe they were just doing it for cameras, whatever, but they turned up with their homemade banner that said, "Football, created by the poor, stolen by the rich."
What a metaphor for hashtag the world. I'm just joking. No, the world wasn't created by the poor entirely. Alrighty.
If you look too deeply. Yes,
yeah. Adam, thank you so much. Always a pleasure. Catch up with you tomorrow. Adam Gilchrist.